Okay, I wrote an essay, and I titled it Costa Rica. Oh, right there. Okay. I titled it Costa Rica, and I sent it to Ladies Home Journal, and they published it, and they changed the title, which they call The Vacation Nightmare That Changed My Life. So I guess they didn't like the subtlety of Costa Rica. But so here it is. It was going to be the perfect vacation, Christmas in Costa Rica. Our kids, Simon, 13, and Lulu, 10, were old enough to appreciate not only the white sand beaches and turquoise ocean, but also the country's culture, history, and what I hoped would be an educational tour of its rainforests. It was going to be perfect if I could just get on the damn plane. I was terrified of flying. 8 years earlier, my family, I think I have to take my glasses off, my family was on a cross-country flight when we hit a patch of turbulence, the kind that makes people gasp and grip their armrests. Clutching baby Lulu as the plane hammered up and down, I began to shake and sweat and cry. I was sure I was going to drop her. The turbulence subsided, but not my dry-mouthed fear. A year later, 9/11 only cemented my certainty that being in the air was unsafe. After that, I avoided flying at all costs. And sometimes those costs were high. I missed both my grandmother's funerals, my high school reunion, the chance to help my best friend through her divorce. I missed a lot, but told myself it was okay. It hadn't always been this way. While growing up in Idaho's panhandle, I lived a few blocks from our tiny airport and loved lying in the backyard, watching the planes zoom overhead. I dreamed of jetting off to Paris or New York City or Disneyland. I asked my dad if I could take flying lessons, and he said sure, but not until I could back the Maverick out of the driveway and clear the mailbox. The flying lessons never did materialize, but Dad paid for college and graduate school, including flights home for Christmas. Sorry. Eventually, my childhood excitement about flying morphed into nonchalance until that day when terror took over. So I indulged in some magical thinking. If I stayed on the ground, I could keep my family safe. But they wanted to travel. If I didn't want to go, they reasoned, I could stay home. But I didn't want to be left behind. And I was sick and tired of grounding myself out of fear. So in the words of a good friend, I pulled up my big girl pants and decided to get on the plane.
She decided to get on that plane, so we can hear you, but we can't see you.
Oh.
Okay, so is this good? Can you tell?
Oh.
I know. You don't have to hear me.
Okay.
This is a stage whisper.
You can't see me. Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay. I'll put this on the lectern. And
let's see if I can see that. It'd have to be up a little higher.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Actually, our musician whispers.
Okay.
So we'd let you do it.
Okay. Now you can see me and hear me. Okay. But, all right. On the morning of our flight, I nearly ran away. I sobbed through security and threw up in the airport bathroom. But I managed to board. My calm and capable husband, Cam, doled out snacks to our kids while I cowered in another row. On takeoff, I held hands with a Costa Rican woman. Someone brought me a beer. I downed it and fell asleep. Costa Rica was everything we'd imagined. Our hotel was gorgeous, the food delicious. There was swimming, windsailing, and surfing. For Cam, an avid runner, the warm weather and flat roads were an invitation to go those long distances he loved. He'd had some shortness of breath back home, but we both thought it was just exercise-induced asthma triggered by pollution. It would vanish in Costa Rica. It certainly wasn't serious enough to prevent him from setting out on a long run the third night of our vacation. We agreed to meet back in the hotel room an hour later to get ready for dinner. I went to the hotel gym for a jog on the treadmill, leaving the kids to watch TV in the room. After 30 minutes, Lulu appeared. "Mom, there's a guy who wants to talk to you," she said. Annoyed, I jumped off the treadmill to follow her. A man stopped us at the door. "Are you Cam Strocker's wife?" I nodded, confused. As I heard the man say, I saw him fall. And ambulance. And front of the hotel. I grabbed Lulu's hand and we sprinted through the terracotta colored lobby. "Can you please tell my son to meet us out front?" I called to the man. Simon caught up with us. He's fast like his dad. And the three of us squeezed into the ambulance. Cam, dressed in a red tank top and blue running shorts, was lying on a stretcher. An oozing cut sliced through a bruise, swelling on his forehead. But his eyes were open, and as soon as he saw me, he asked, "What happened?" "He fell and hit his head," the hotel concierge said through the open ambulance door. "I think you tripped," I improvised, scrambling for a reason why my husband would have fallen. "Or you fainted. You hit your head." The medical technician spoke to the concierge. "Why are they speaking in Spanish?" Cam asked. "We're in Costa Rica," I said, "on vacation." I smiled at the kids. Silly dad, he forgot where we were. But to myself, I thought, what the hell is wrong with Cam? The concierge told me that the ambulance would take us to the nearest hospital. "I don't want to go to the hospital," Cam said. "Is it really necessary?" I asked. "Can't he simply rest in the hotel?" A flurry of Spanish followed. "Why are they speaking Spanish?" Cam asked. I looked at the concierge and the white faces of our kids. "We're in Costa Rica," I said carefully. "On vacation." He nodded. Then he said, "Can you just tell me what happened?" "Okay," I said, "let's go to the hospital." On the way, Cam repeated the same questions. His mind had become a colander, holding information for just seconds before rinsed through. At first, I answered him, "Costa Rica, vacation, you fell and hit your head." Then the kids took turns, "Costa Rica, vacation, you fell and hit your head." We stopped to pick up a young doctor. After examining Cam, she told me he needed to be airlifted to the hospital in San Jose, which owned the country's only CAT scan machine. "Can't we drive?" I asked the doctor. She looked me in the eye. "It takes 5 hours. He needs to get there quickly." I panicked. I could barely get on a commercial airplane. How was I supposed to get on a tiny one? Weren't small planes the ones most likely to crash? "Can you just tell me what happened?" Cam's voice broke through my fluttering thoughts. I looked down at my husband, the blanket pulled to his chin. His large blue eyes searched my face. "You fell," I said. "We're flying you to a hospital." At the airfield, I stepped out of the ambulance to catch my breath. The kids followed me out. "Is Dad going to be okay?" "Yes," I said emphatically. Finally, our plane, an 8-seat turboprop, arrived. First, they boarded Cam, sliding the stretcher into an open space. The doctor followed, then the kids, then me. Relief that Cam would be getting the medical attention he needed buoyed me up the steps onto the plane. The engine roared, the seat vibrated, the lights on the control panel blinked, and then we were aloft. Emotions shot through me. Thrums of, "Cam, are you going to be all right?" Wiggles of, "I'm handling this." Waves of, "I'm here, Lulu, it's okay." Emotions, yes, but not fear of flying. There was no room for what ifs. What if the plane crashes? What if I die? This was really happening, this sudden rearranging of priorities. At the hospital in San Jose, I put the kids, jittery with exhaustion, to bed on stretchers in the emergency room and sat next to Cam. Until 6 in the morning, he was still asking the same 3 questions, but the CAT scan of his brain was normal. No injury, no swelling. The doctors wanted to perform tests on Cam's heart as well, but we scoffed at the idea. How could a runner have a heart problem? By 8, he started to remember. By 10, he insisted we leave and get back to our vacation. By noon, we did, hiring a van to drive us to the hotel. The next day, we were on horseback in the rainforest, photographing monkeys and ziplining across the treetops. On the flight home, some of my discomfort returned. I managed. I even drank a cup of coffee. Over a sea of heads, I smiled at Cam, who insisted on sitting with the kids. Back in Connecticut, Cam had a thorough physical. We learned that a major artery leading to his heart was 90% blocked. The cardiologist said he probably passed out because his heart and brain weren't getting enough oxygen. The survival rate from such an episode, if you don't have access to a defibrillator, is about 10%. The doctor said you were incredibly lucky and speculated that Cam's runner's heart resumed beating on its own only because it was so strong. Now, thanks to a stent and cholesterol-lowering medication, Cam is back to running. I've flown a half a dozen times since Costa Rica, though never without saying a prayer at takeoff and landing. When I look back, I realize that I was so afraid of catastrophic what-ifs that I forgot how much what-if used to thrill me. What if you drove backward? I used to wonder. What if you won a million chocolate bars? What if it was me up there flying that plane? I loved imagining all those possibilities, optimism surging through me like current. Before Costa Rica, I'd convinced myself that avoiding air travel would cotton wool my family and protect us forever. It wasn't true, of course, but it took Cam's collapse for me to understand that life is full of promise and danger in the sky and on the ground. I couldn't protect my husband from his treacherous artery. I couldn't protect our children from the trauma of seeing their beloved dad, our brainiac Mr. Fix-It, strapped to a stretcher, dropping thoughts like petals. I can't prevent my own death. That day taught me that all I can do is climb on board. Costa Rica, I have to say, letting it stand for love and family and what if. Costa Rica, I have to say, as many times as we all need to hear it. Thank you.